Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Roy Steinman, who is the author of the Big Book of Reincarnation, Examining the Evidence That We Have All Lived Before. Roy has created a really good book on the research behind different stories, different theories, different explanations of the idea of reincarnation. I enjoyed his book a great deal, including putting together the theories that have come forth. Can we really access through hypnosis our past lives and even our future lives? And can this be used for explanations of maybe spontaneous illnesses that disappear after after these sessions, maybe explanations of why people are born with birthmarks, and certain birthmarks anyway, and whether or not we have a story that goes across lifetimes, which is what I personally believe. I think our soul and our oversoul have agendas that go across lives that we may or may not be aware of. Welcome, Roy. Thanks for joining us today. Are you there, Roy?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Delighted.
So you're calling in from England, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Great, great. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about how you got interested in reincarnation? Because this book required a lot of research.
It certainly did. It's a long story, but I'll keep it short. Basically, my interest in reincarnation came about really through spiritualism, to which I was introduced when I was just a teenager. I then landed a job with a spiritualist newspaper called Psychic News, which was a weekly newspaper, got to know some of the best mediums in the country, satisfied myself through having private sittings with some of them that death is not the end, it's the physical end, but spiritually we carry on. And when I began to dwell on that, I found that there were two very clear schools of belief within spiritualism. One was that you could be reborn and return to Earth, and that it was part of the learning process, the spiritual learning process. The other was that there was no such thing as reincarnation, and once you died, you were in the next world, and you continued forever in that spiritual dimension. And it puzzled me that there were those conflicting views and just why it was. And I thought the only way I could come to a conclusion was to begin looking at the evidence for reincarnation from a scientific viewpoint, which I did starting more than 40 years ago. And over those years, I've collected an enormous amount of information, met many people who believe they have memories of past lives, spoken to researchers that do the work and go and interview them and talk to witnesses and try to analyze the evidence. And as a result, I decided it was time to share that information with the public, because I became aware that most of the good evidence was being published in scientific journals and medical journals, but wasn't really getting out to the public at large. So hopefully through the Big Book of Reincarnation, I will make a lot more people aware of that, and they can look at it and draw their own conclusions.
Well, on Temple of Health Radio Show, which I've been doing for about 17 years, I've interviewed many of the people that you have in your book. Bruce Goldberg's work is fascinating. You know, Between Lives, and I'm actually interviewing PHM Atwater on the 26th of January for Near Death Experiences. So, and she's been on many times. So, you know, I really think that putting all of this together is very important, because you know, we don't really I mean, each author has their own work that they do, and as you say, some are therapists that are putting down their own experiences, but I think yours is the first book I've read that puts everything together, puts all of the different viewpoints together in kind of a more journalistic fashion, where you don't really, you're not really putting out an agenda that you believe, and only putting supporting evidence for that agenda, which is important.
Yeah, no, my, I have no interest in persuading people one way or the other. The whole purpose is to say, look, you may not be aware how good the evidence is. This is it. Now, now you know. You, it's up to you to do what you will with that. And people often ask me what my view on reincarnation is, and my response usually, I dodge the issue by saying, which type of reincarnation are you asking me about? Because there are so many different. There's the Buddhist view on reincarnation, Hindus, mm-hmm. and others. And it's very complicated. It's not easy. And I don't believe that there are any simple answers. But it's such an enormous subject, and one that captures the public's imagination. I mean, the new film Cloud Atlas is a very clever way of dealing with the subject as well. And hopefully we'll make a lot more people interested in pursuing the subject.
Well, one idea I had to help correlate all these different viewpoints into perhaps one thing that might be true overall is that if you fiercely believe in something, like if you believe that after your death you cross the River Styx, or if you believe you know, a more Christian view that because you were bad, you're going to hell, or if you believe that nothing exists after death, I'm kind of the opinion that for a while anyway, your beliefs do influence what happens after death. So if you believe in reincarnation, that's, you know, that's something that that then happens. And then what some of the literature, I think the Alice Bailey literature says is that when we die, whatever we believe in happens for a while. So, and then finally, our guides and our advisors, and in your book you talk about that, and you know, that there are advisors in the place between lives, actually come and get us and start talking to us about what we're going to do in our next life. So, you know, the idea is that, yes, if you really are an atheist, if you're really believing that nothing happens, then that's exactly what will happen for a while. So it seems like our belief systems do carry on after our death, but then eventually perhaps there's a more a program that we go into that, you know, that we participate in, even though we don't believe
it.
That's
very much my view as well,
yeah.
Because when you look at the way in which reincarnation cases are spread around the globe geographically, there are an awful lot more in those cultures where Eastern beliefs, for example, tell people that reincarnation happens.
Mm-hmm.
Could be explained by the fact that they simply want to believe in what they've been taught, and so these cases of reincarnation are more, perhaps more fictitious than they seem, although the evidence is very strong. But there are some puzzles about that. I mean, I believe I talk in my book about my visits to the Lebanon, to the Druze communities,
mm-hmm.
and there I was astonished that it's almost impossible to talk to any person within the Druze community who either doesn't remember his past life or hasn't got someone in the family that recalls a past life. It seems to be almost a biological fact that their memory will carry over from one life to the next. On the other hand, in India, where I mm-hmm. spoke at some length with one of the top Indian researchers who is based in Bangalore, which is in southern India, but finds there are no cases of reincarnation that she can research in that area. Her name, by the way, is Dr. Satwan Basrisha. But the best cases that she has investigated are all in the north of India. So India as a whole culturally accepts and believes in reincarnation, both in the north and the south. And yet there's this strange a lack of cases down in the south. And I can offer, and she can offer, no real explanation for that. But just on that same subject, I think one thing that comes across very clearly in the cases of people remembering past lives in different cultures is how their expectations appear to, between lives, appear to be played out. So, for example, a Christian with a past life memory may well say they saw Jesus, whereas in India, somebody say they saw Buddha. And there are other cultural differences that I talk about in the book. But I think that certainly confirms your view and my view that we find on arriving in that next dimension what we expect to find for a period until we adjust.
There's another thing that occurred to me when I was reading reading that thing on the Druze, which was very remarkable because, as you say, the majority of the children in that area do have past life memories that that are verifiable. One is genetic, and that's that perhaps the genetics of those people prevent the veil from coming down. I mean, we're told that a veil comes over so that we won't be distracted by past life issues because we're supposed to concentrate on current life issues and not spend our life, daydreaming about the past. And then the other thing in India, you know, perhaps there are electromagnetic differences between, in different parts of the earth that might make the veil more, if the veil really is influenced by that, I don't know, it could be. Perhaps where people remember and where they don't remember has something to do with the electromagnetics of the planet. You see, the veil
The veil idea is an interesting one because, in fact, for most of us, the veil is very much in place. Most of us do not remember a past life. And that raises the question why these children, and as you know, having read the book, my book focuses very largely on cases of children who start talking about a past life almost from the moment they have learned to speak. And by the age of about 6 or 8, those memories fade very rapidly. So it's just that small window of opportunity. Now, why does the veil lift for that period of time, and why, for most of us, is it firmly covering our eyes and our memories, if you like? I agree with the implication of what you just said was that we don't really want to live with all those past memories as well as what we're experiencing now. And people often say to me, what's the best way of me remembering what a past life was? And my answer to that is always, why do you want to remember? You're here to lead this life.
You should
get on with it. Unless, of course, there's something that troubles you in this life that just may have a past life source.
Exactly.
Probably comes through in phobias and those sort of things, and that's where past life regression can be very useful.
Yeah, think about how many people have a phobia, a claustrophobia, and think about how many people have been buried alive. I mean, either in graves or buried alive underground, or in earthquakes.
And people are afraid of snakes. Well, snakes can be pretty venomous, so if you were bitten and killed in a previous life with a snake bite, it can explain that as well. So, yeah, the big problem, as I touch on this in the book, is that under hypnosis, people have been shown to remember things that they believe they are recalling from a past life, but which, mm-hmm. on investigation, turn out to be stories that they read in a novel many years ago, for example, which they even mm-hmm. have forgotten reading, but it obviously had an impact on their subconscious. So we need to be very, very cautious about that evidence. But there are some good cases under reincarnation, under regression, which do appear to provide strong evidence for reincarnation.
Yeah, the book that I remember, I interviewed him, was he took, I think, a couple thousand people between lives, not in their past life, but what happened between lives, because that's really what's curious. I mean, I sort of accept reincarnation is the only thing that's really logical and has the ability to explain why things occur the way they do. But what I'm curious about is what happens between lives. Like in your book, you say at least in some of the stories that you track down, a lot of the reincarnations occurred, if soldiers were killed in a foreign land, the reincarnation occurred in the foreign land rather than back at their home. And we also mm-hmm. know that for violent deaths that would occur in war, obviously, they reincarnate very quickly, whereas, you know, the average unviolent death is probably around 200 years. So what do we do during those 200 years? You know, we must do something. And that's what's very interesting. So there's probably two different kinds of reincarnation. One, maybe the human that's not real evolved, who finds himself wandering around after death and then just sort of, you know, is given permission to go into another life in that area and doesn't really know how to travel, you know, other than just locally. And then, you know, other more evolved souls that have a lot of things to do between lives, a lot of planning, a lot of, you know, unfinished business, and then finally come back in with a plan, you know, with a real established plan and knowing what they're going to do and really knowing their purpose in life. You know, because a lot of people are wandering around the earth not knowing why they're here, not knowing what they're supposed to do. And then other people are born and know exactly what they're supposed to do. You know, it's a matter of
people with a mission.
Spiritual evolvement. Yeah. So that's my idea when I was reading it. Yeah, there's more than one kind of reincarnation, planned and unplanned, you know. It's kind of...
Well, I suspect that everything is planned. That's just my gut feeling. But it may be planned by us, and we have to be ready for the plan, I guess. So mm-hmm. some people may take a lot of convincing before they are prepared to return. What interests me, I mentioned my sort of beginnings in spiritualism and this conflict in belief on reincarnation or disbelief amongst people. Most spiritualists believe that once you pass on, you are reunited with your loved ones, and that's where your destiny lies in the next world. Mm-hmm. And again, we talked about belief earlier. It could well be that once we get to the next world and we're reunited with those that we love, that we don't want to come back, and it could be a very long time before we can be persuaded to part company with them. But I touch upon that in the book because there are some interesting cases where whole families or groups of people appear to reincarnate at the same time, maybe 20 years after they died or more,
mm-hmm.
But with the clear motive of remaining together in a family. And so often we find cases of a father dying and then is born again as his own grandson, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one example of the quite bizarre relationships that develop in families where there is a belief in reincarnation. And even in families that are not related, where they learn that their father or mother has been reborn in a different family, this This is particularly true of the Drews families. Those mm-hmm. two families become very close, and they mm-hmm. even share the child that is remembering that past life, and the child will visit regularly and sometimes stay over for a week or two, so that everybody is satisfied that they haven't lost out on that soul's death and rebirth.
Yeah, it really changes your views if when you see them interacting like that, that really we don't have to feel that we've lost a loved one. It's really comforting. I interviewed Dr. Walter Simkew on his book, Return of the Revolutionaries, and it broadens it out a little bit more, that movements can be people come together for a higher spiritual purpose. His book, The Return of the Revolutionaries, he mentioned a group of souls that came in to help the American Revolution occur, and he claims they're back again now to help the spiritual revolution, and probably in the 1990s, the idea that bringing in a lot more spiritual knowledge for people, kind of to loosen the reins of organized religion. And I really think that that's true, too, that people, the groups of souls decide to come in and then do a much bigger social shift to help advance humanity spiritually.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Interestingly, I've met Walter on a couple of occasions, and we've communicated as well on different topics. His argument is also that when people return for another life on Earth, that they often look strikingly similar to the life they lived
right.
before. And that raises a lot of eyebrows in people who say, why would they? They've got different parents and different DNA. But I'm beginning to suspect that DNA... there's something called junk DNA that we all carry around, but it may not be junk at all. It may well be a mechanism that enables a soul to carry with it from one life to the next certain aspects of its character or appearance. That's just a theory of mine, but it's hopefully at some time in the future we'll know more about that. But certainly... Simkew has produced some fantastic pictures of people who do look strikingly similar from one life to the next and are prepared to believe that they were that person. He himself believes that he was John Adams, I think, in one of his past lives.
Yeah, and Oprah, in his book, what he does is he puts the pictures upside down so you can't really, you look more at structure rather than just recognize him as Oprah's picture. And he claims she was a white male abolitionist around the time of the Revolutionary War. And they look the facial structure is the same. And there's another thing that I think we need to look at. He says that we also often maintain the abilities, like Oprah being born into a very poor family was able to propel herself into a position of power and wealth, but she did that in other lifetimes too, evidently. She knows how to do that, and
right.
so that's kind of interesting, that it's not just physical features but also character features. If you were an alcoholic in one life, then you have to get over that. I know I got a phone call from one of my relatives who was giving a talk at Oxford. And he had an overwhelming desire to kill himself for no reason. I mean, wasn't depressed, no reason to be depressed. And I did a little reading for him over the phone because he was quite distraught. And I said, well, you killed yourself in that very room in a previous life. I said, you've got to, and I helped him, understand what was happening. And then he was able to, get, and he only had the desire when he was in the room. So that is interesting, that you are drawn back to the same room, and then you have to overcome the same energy. It's kind of like a very, very interesting idea. Now, there's no way for me to prove that. That's just the information I got. And he's never been suicidal since. So and nor before. So, you know, it was just that one instance.
Mm.
So if you commit suicide, you may have to get over it in another lifetime. I mean, that's what I think. I think whenever you make mistakes, you have to encounter the same energies and then get through it with a different result,
yep.
Which would make sense.
Yep.
You know,
that makes a lot of sense. Yep.
You have to correct that mistake. And so, obviously, suicide's not going to be a real good choice because you're going to have to come back and redo it. Alcoholism isn't a good choice because you're going to have to eventually get over it. So you might as well do it now rather than later, because later is just harder. That's what I tell people. You know,
when people say to me, "Well, why is reincarnation necessary? Why can't we learn to evolve and develop in the next world?" And I say to them, "Well, hopefully the next world is a place where there are few troubles and worries, and the only way you can overcome and improve your character is often to be presented with situations which you can experience on a physical plane,
mm-hmm.
Where you have to overcome them with your own will and determination. And if you don't, then presumably you do come back and have another shot of it. Maybe not exactly the same scenario, but a very similar challenge, and until you are ready and able to do that, then it's probably going to repeat over and over again. So you're absolutely right. You know, sort it out now and then move on is the best way forward.
And there's an interesting definition in the ancient Aramaic, which is what Jesus taught and spoke in. The word sin is an archery term meaning to miss the mark. This is from Michael Rice, who wrote Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Michael used to be on the show monthly, and I learned quite a bit from him. But if it's an archery term meaning to miss the mark, then what Michael would say is that you're always given a chance, a second chance, a third chance, how many it takes to get it right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you keep marrying an alcoholic who beats you, if you keep, until you give up the idea that you're a victim, if you keep, going into business with people who cheat you and then, take all your money, you have to realize that you have to change something within yourself in order to change your external circumstances. And it would appear from the evidence in your book and others, other researchers who've written similar books in terms of, but you've reviewed them all in here, I think, that goes on lifetime after lifetime. You know, it doesn't, just because you die, these lessons don't stop.
Absolutely. And I think as far as time is concerned, to us it probably seems like an eternity, but this life is just a drop in the ocean, really. And
mm-hmm.
There's no hurry. If we don't get it right this time, then I'm sure we have to. Until we get to that, it's the Buddhist view of nirvana. Until you've got everything right, then you can move on and evolve even more, but on a spiritual level. Until then, I think reincarnation is the one philosophy that makes the most sense, though I'm very cautious in drawing too many conclusions. In the book, I make it clear that
mm-hmm.
maybe reincarnation is only necessary for some individuals. Maybe there are other paths to follow. We can only base the evidence on those very good, well-researched cases involving children in particular, where the evidence, there's really no better explanation for what they are able to remember and the information they give than that they had lived before. And interestingly, 50% of those cases involve a violent death. So it
Right.
could be that they are remembering those past lives because of the trauma of their death in their past life. And if they'd died comfortably in their beds, then probably they would be reborn without any knowledge of that. But violence does show up not only in some of the best cases of memory, but also mm-hmm. in the striking evidence that birthmarks provide. And these there are the cases investigated by Dr. Ian Stevenson of the University of Virginia, who collected over 2,000 cases of individuals around the world who not only had memories of a past life, but had birthmarks or birth defects that were mm-hmm. clearly very closely aligned to an experience in that previous life. So, for example, bullet wounds through the head or missing limbs or fingers or hands or whatever. And that evidence is so striking that I've yet to see a skeptic come up with a satisfactory
right.
explanation other than reincarnation.
And it seems that if you look at some of the metaphysical literature saying that there is an atom of information that is transferred lifetime to lifetime, and that it's an informational system. So if there's a flaw in that system because somebody had a traumatic incident, either a stab wound or a gunshot or a had their head crushed or whatever, you would think that it could, because it was the last thing that happened before they died, it could cause a distortion in the field that's being transmitted. And then that
yeah.
could then manifest as the birthmark, or even things like, if you look at the scientific or the literature of illnesses and conditions that have resolved after past life regression, I think, like, if your head was crushed, you might have headaches in the next life, that kind of thing, you see, that would explain that our actual field, that all of our you'd call it the etheric field, the blueprint, if it's distorted, then you'll have a physical sign for that.
Yep. Yeah, and I think maybe it depends on how quickly one is reborn. If it happens very quickly, then the body may well be affected.
Right, may have it there, yeah. That's very true. And then, maybe if, because the average, according to metaphysical sources, the average life person stays out 200 to 300 years between lives if the life is really planned. I mean, so probably a lot of planning goes into these lives, including the family in which you're born, the circumstances, what your mission is. I had to be born in this lifetime where they had breast implants because that was going to be my mission. So I ended up in meditation being told to get breast implants. I got breast implants and I had problems with them, and then I wrote a book on the problems, So obviously, if your mission is breast implants, being born in the 1800s isn't going to be of much use. So, I mean, you could imagine that all of these things have to be in place to, so that you can have a mission of service, which is what we come to do.
You touched earlier on the fact that in some countries there are reports of reincarnation where individuals are born. They are from another country, but they're born in the country in which they die. And
right.
Very interesting cases I touch on in the book relate to Japanese soldiers who were shot down over Burma. And
mm-hmm.
then when the Japanese were attacking Burma during the Second World War, and then some Burmese women gave birth to young children who began having memories of being Japanese soldiers, wanting to dress in the same format,
mm-hmm.
to eat the same food, and even acting out in a military way, wanting to play with guns, etc. We're talking about girls doing that, which quite astonishing, certainly as far as
mm-hmm.
the families were concerned. Having a child who claimed to be a Japanese soldier in a past life, who was an invader of the country, was hardly something they would have encouraged.
No.
And it does indicate that maybe that any any mission as such isn't always as very clear. Mm-hmm. And maybe reincarnation doesn't operate always in that way. Maybe the sudden death and the desire to continue living enables some souls to just take on the body of the nearest pregnant woman that it can find. And I think some of the cases that I describe in the book, it's very hard for us as observers to really come up with any clear-cut explanation as to why reincarnation operates the way it does in those particular cultures. And we just have to be open to all sorts of possibilities. But I've also come across a lot of cases where clearly people are born with a mission, and that's that's the good side of reincarnation, if you like, where there's a very positive purpose and outcome.
And as you would expect, people who are very exceptional, like Gandhi and Mother Teresa, and people who are real spiritual leaders, the Dalai Lama, which we can talk about in a minute, because the Dalai Lama has its own special references to reincarnation, probably the most interesting in the world. But exceptional people often reincarnate as other exceptional people, and you would expect them to, because they come to make a difference. So if there's great writers, I had always just thought that J.K. Rowling, and I'm actually in a book with her. There's a book called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, and she's one of the authors, and I'm one of the authors in spiritual medicine. And her chapter is called The Power of Persistence, because I don't know whether you know this, but she submitted her Harry Potter manuscript to over 50 publishers and got rejected.
So, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I had always thought, now this is just my own thought, I have no proof for this, that she was Charles Dickens. I mean, this is just something I had all, and then I was very interested to read in your book that at least somebody else has that theory too. And so it just, I have no way to prove it, of course, but I felt she was a great author in the past, because she said that book was just given to her. And that ability to have a book of that nature given to one, it means that you're like a Beethoven and are given a symphony, you see.
Yep.
You have to have the files able to do that, which probably means in the past you perfected that. I think that I don't think that just anybody can be given a work like that. I think you have to, work hard at becoming a writer and holding that energy and then being able to write it down,
Absolutely, yes. Interestingly, there are quite a few cases of writers and musicians and poets and others who say that they weren't responsible for the work some of the work that they did. It was virtually handed to them on a plate, as it were. So they were the scribes, but not the the inspiration behind it. I could well be with J.K. Rowling, though I do point out that there are two claims about her past lives. One was Dickens. I'm trying to remember who the other one was, but
Lewis Carroll. I just read it.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So there's no way we can be sure. There's also I make the point. I run a website called ParanormalReview.com, where I keep up to date on reincarnation cases and other paranormal topics. And I covered recently the fact that there are now four living females who all claim to be the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. And the problem with some of these cases where you're talking about famous people is that there is so much evidence in the public record or so much material about their lives that for any individual to come up with something original that confirms they are who they say they are is very, very difficult. Marilyn Monroe. Maybe none of them are, but I don't think it's going to be possible for anyone to prove one way or the other.
Yeah, and I've interviewed Paul von Voort on a number of occasions, and Paul has a theory that perhaps, not just one person was, let's say, Cleopatra or Marilyn Monroe. You know, perhaps the energy of Marilyn is spread across several people, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be one-to-one like that. Because after all, we do have a soul, and that soul has energy projections according to, you know, the metaphysical literature. It has multiple energy projections throughout time-space. So you could have more than one sharing the energy of Maryland. You know, it has to go up and then back down, but it might be there might be more than one person receiving the energy and soul memory of the person that was Marilyn Monroe. But I think if she looks like Marilyn, that adds more evidence, though. You know, with
sure.
Walter's information, yeah.
I think one
so
or two
obviously,
of them
all
do,
those Marilyns don't look alike, probably.
Yeah. I touch on the possibility that that you and I, as people observe us at this moment, are just one small aspect of a much larger soul, the Oversoul or the group
mm-hmm.
soul,
the Oversoul, right?
That could be manifesting simultaneously in another body. That's one possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Or the possibility that Marilyn Monroe, a different aspect of her group soul is now manifesting in either one or all of the four women. And even the Dalai Lama has talked about that possibility. There was an interesting case, again, it's in my book, where a lama, a well-known lama was died, and five different monasteries all claimed that they had found his reincarnation, and the Dalai Lama is satisfied that all five were right, that the lama had his soul had split into those five, and one I think was a female, if I remember rightly. So we have to be very open to a number of possibilities in terms of what reincarnation is and isn't, and how it might operate.
Yeah, if these are actually transmissions of energetic blueprints, why couldn't there be a copying machine in a higher dimension? I mean, you know, there could be, if you think about it. I mean, if the need exists to spread the wisdom of a great lama, and what better way to do it than to put it into five individuals that might at least have a chance on furthering the spiritual education of a people, you see? They'd have five times the chance of actually doing that. Because, as you know, I mean, a child can have an accidental death. I mean, that does exist, according to Edgar Cayce. He says it's rare, but accidents do occur. And then another... You know, they might get waylaid into something else because the family, you know, maybe their father dies and they have to work for a living instead of going to school. You know, there's all sorts of things that happen that perhaps are out of the realm of control. And if they really need, you know, this spiritually based lama to, you know, to become another leader, then maybe five replicas in would be the answer, you know. So you don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of things we don't understand, but I do think that it is a blueprint that has physical, emotional, and even spiritual attributes that passes through.
Yeah.
So
I agree on that.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's information. So you may not find it specifically in the physical world, other than maybe in the DNA, but it is information. And so the information that is us did not begin with our birth. Have you ever heard of the angel scroll that that Greg Braden talks about?
I've not. No, that's not.
It's something you might want to research. Greg said that an angel scroll was discovered by the Dead Sea, and in 1954 was bought by a group of Byzantine monks it's a thousand-word document felt to be written by Jesus, and the first 100 words have been translated, and it says conception is not the beginning, nor is death the end. And then it goes on to describe reincarnation, which is probably why it's still not being widely circulated in the Christian community. But it certainly is an interesting idea, and the way it's written in kind of a language similar to the Course in Miracles, which makes you think that it probably was written by somebody much more spiritually evolved than, say, the average writer. So it's an interesting document. It's one you might want to look into, because it certainly has reincarnation out front as in the beginning of the document. So, but
certainly the early Christians did appear to have a belief in reincarnation until Origen's beliefs were anathemized.
Right.
back in the fifth or sixth century, if I remember rightly, and then any mention of a pre-existence of souls was ruled out, and so now the Christian Church does not teach reincarnation, but I talk in my book about a couple of well-known English clergymen who were adamant that reincarnation was a fact, and one of them, the Reverend Chad Vara, who founded the Samaritans here in the UK. I think there are branches of the Samaritans who help people who are suicidal in particular. I think there are branches in the US. It may have a different name there. But he not only believed in reincarnation, but could remember some of his past lives as well. So regardless of what the church itself may teach, he knew from personal experience that he had lived before and was expecting to live again in another life in a physical body.
Yeah, and any scholar who has actually studied the Dead Sea Scrolls, and one of my good friends, Trish McKinnon, who actually is going to be on the radio show soon again, she wrote a book, Hampton Roads published it, on Jesus's, the lost 30 years of Jesus's development before he went back and had the 40 days in the desert. And basically, according to her historical work, Mary's mother was in Ireland, and she was being beaten by her husband. So she took Mary's mother took Mary to an Essene establishment where Mary was raised. Mm-hmm. So the Essenes, as you know, believed in reincarnation. They were a Jewish sect, believed in reincarnation, were vegetarian, did healing. And there quite a bit is known about the Essenes. So Mary was raised with that belief system. So we can assume that Jesus was also raised with that belief system. So it's all throughout history. I mean, and what you were talking about is called the Ecumenical Council, which I think was in 546 A.D. And basically, it was a council to wipe out any reference to reincarnation in the Bible, because the church didn't want people to think they had multiple lifetimes to get it right, because they were trying to collect 10% from everybody.
Right.
And it's hard to do that if you've got multiple lives. You can't really narrow it down then and demand your 10% to get into heaven. So that's the way I read it, Power and control, just the old story, power and control. You can always follow the money, as they say.
Yep.
So we have a few minutes left. Would you like to recount what you know of the Dalai Lama and how officially the government, not the government, but the religious sector in Tibet goes to find the Dalai Lama once the previous Dalai Lama has died?
Well, of course, all that might change soon because of China's attitude to Tibet. But at the moment, certainly the present Dalai Lama and the previous ones were always found, first of all, through signs that were given to them either before the death of the Dalai Lama. He would indicate where he would be reborn. But they also use mediums or seers to look for signs, and they know exactly where he has been reborn. And then a search party goes off and usually finds four or five or more young boys who were born after the death of the Dalai Lama and who appeared to be special in some way. They may not have talked about being the Dalai Lama, but their parents or other people in the village may feel that there's something special about them. And the search party always takes with them different items, some of which belonged to the previous Dalai Lama and some of which didn't. And when they arrive at the homes of these people, sometimes the people in the search party were very close to the previous Dalai Lama, but they will often dress in rather drab clothes and not be not appear to be of any importance at all. And so in the case of the present Dalai Lama, certainly as soon as he saw one of the people in the search party, he addressed him in a way that indicated he knew exactly who he was. Right. When he was shown different items that had belonged to the previous Dalai Lama, he chose all the ones that he recognized, and they were all from the previous Dalai Lama. And when he was taken back to the palace in Tibet where Dalai Lama had lived, which was not immediately, it was some months afterwards, but he even was, he went to a chest and opened up, opened the lid, and inside were his false teeth from a past life, and he could remember where he had put them. So what really interests me is that although Buddhism is a religious belief, if you like, based on the teachings of Buddha, the Buddhists themselves take a very scientific approach to evidence and looking for evidence for reincarnation. And so they don't just accept the first person that says they were the reborn Dalai Lama. They'll look for proof, and they will try and catch them out and do different things to prove them wrong, if you like. But that's the system, and it works very well. Now, what's going to happen when the current Dalai Lama passes on remains to be seen. The Chinese, as you know, chose their own Panchen Lama, so there were two, and the one that the Dalai Lama identified as the reborn Panchen Lama has disappeared, and nobody knows where he or his family are. So I'm expecting that when Dalai Lama does die, there will be a huge conflict about finding the next Dalai Lama, but we'll have to wait and see. Whether Chinese will use any scientific methods or just use pulling a straw out of a pot, which is the system they used for the Panchen Lama identification, we'll have to wait and see. But it's very sad that a culture like that is so being so dominated by politics, basically.
Well, I mean, I think politics has actually inserted itself into almost every venture that was spiritually pure or tried to. I mean, I think that's the nature of evil. It tries to anywhere where it can advance itself, it will.
Yeah.
But, you know. So would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The book, again, is The Big Book of Reincarnation, and it should be available at most good book stores. If not, it's definitely on Amazon and other websites. And it's also on my website, which is paranormalreview.com, which is a blog, basically. So it's anything that I feel I want to comment on in relation to a whole range of paranormal topics, but reincarnation does tend to dominate my blogs, I'm pleased to say, because clearly that's a subject for which I have an enormous passion and continue to have. And I'm already cutting enough material, I think, for the next big book of reincarnation, and maybe in 10 years' time, or maybe in my next life.
There you go. Well, let me know if I can interview you on it. I'd be happy to. As I said, the Big Book of Reincarnation is an overview, and as I've been interviewing the authors and the researchers and the therapists that he has in his wonderful index at the back, or the appendix, he has the researchers and the therapists and all of the people who have been have contributed to this book of knowledge. This is, again, like I said in the beginning of the show, the best overview of reincarnation research I've seen. I'd highly recommend anyone who has an interest in reincarnation to read this book, for it's a wealth of knowledge. Again, Roy, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate your time and enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it as well. It's been a pleasure.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we have Dr. Richard Presser back on for information about 2013 and what it holds. Then Catherine Frombich, A Cancer Answer, Holistic Breast Cancer Management, on the 19th of January. And on the 26th of January, PHM Atwater, Near-Death Experiences, the rest of the story. And actually, I think on the 12th, I need to correct that, Trish McKinnon's coming on instead of Dr. Richard Presser, and she's going to be talking about 2013. We have a Noetic Science meeting on the third Thursday of January, and we have some special events at Millennium from the 28th to February 1st. We have bioscans with a GDV camera, which is Kilrinian photography. And we'll be doing those on January 28th to February 1st. And then on Saturday, the 26th, we have a workshop. Kent Boxberger is giving a Adams Hicks Law of Attraction workshop called Mastering the Process. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show. See you then. We'll be right back.